outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Hi, welcome back to Embracing His Glory. I'm Wayne Jacobson, your host for this special feature of the God Journey that we're airing on Tuesday mornings for a season. It's designed to help people experience God's glory in their lives and through their lives to the circumstances and people around them. I hope it's being helpful to you. I've appreciated a lot the emails and comments people have made to me as to how this study's impacting them. It has certainly shaped some wonderful things in my life. We began this study with Paul's words in 2 Corinthians 3 about beholding him as in a mirror and then being transformed from glory to glory as the uptake of that whole beholding. And we've been talking about beholding his glory, seeing, believing his glory, and then watching that glory shape us as we follow him. I love the way John plays this out in his gospel. He starts in chapter 1. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten of God the Father, full of grace and truth. And we talked about the intersection of those two things, grace and truth coming together inside the reality in which we get to experience God and God gets to experience us and live out through us. And that's the process that we're talking about. In chapter 2, it says when he goes to the wedding feast at Cana, he changes water into wine. And John specifically says he thus revealed his glory in this first sign and the disciples put their faith in him. So into this very temporal world, the glory of God appeared, this time in a miracle. And that glory caused people around to go, ooh, I want to believe in that. And then John chapter 9, we find a very complicated passage. Because as they're in the temple and they walk past a blind man who is, specifically John says, blind from birth. And the disciples' first question is, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents that he would be born blind? So they're looking for someone to blame. What caused this? And Jesus answered and said, it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. You can thank God's glory again. Now, this could be a very cruel thing to say. And when people misunderstand God's sovereignty, they would come to the belief that, yeah, Jesus allowed this man or made sure this man was born blind, so that some 30, 40 years later, he could come by and do a miracle. And never mind that he spent 30, 40 years groping in the darkness and never being able to do the normal things he would want to do with his friends or his family. Never mind that. It's just too important. God needs a show pony. God needs someone to demonstrate this. And I used to think that's what he was talking about. I'm not so sure. Certainly, the disciples are asking why. They're asking the cause question, what caused this? I don't think Jesus' answer is the cause question. I think he's answering something else. They're asking, why did this happen? And he's saying, we have an opportunity here. The why of how it happened, and I know Israel believed that all sickness, whatever, that's what the disciples are reflecting here, all sickness or brokenness is a cause of sin, is caused by sin. So if we can figure out who sinned, that we could somehow fix it. And Jesus is bypassing all of that. And he's not talking about, wow, there's a cause here and we can fix the cause. We can turn the situation around. He's just saying we have an opportunity here. This is an opportunity. And what I believe about the creation and how broken and twisted it is, that our needs, our problems, our deficiencies, our hurts, our brokenness, they're not God-caused. God doesn't allow these things so he can fix them someday. It's the result of the world being out of sync with its creator. So that pain happens and sickness happens and needs happen in this broken world. But the why is not what caused it, but now what's the opportunity? And I love Jesus saying this is the opportunity for God's glory to be revealed. He says the same thing in John chapter 11. Lazarus dies after Jesus delays coming to meet the women, the Mary and Martha, who loved him so much. It was like family to him. And they wanted him to come so that Lazarus wouldn't die. And he dies and he comes and he looks at Mary, Martha, and he says, if you believe, you'll see the glory of the Lord. Do you believe me? Now, she didn't believe that Lazarus was going to be raised from the dead. He wasn't asking her to believe the event, even though he's saying, I am the resurrection and the life. He's pointing her to something that's going to happen, but the believing is just walk with me here. Believe that I am. She follows him and she lets them do whatever it is that he wants to do. That's her part in this belief. It wasn't that she believed God was going to raise her brother from the dead. That's not the point of belief. But it's another opportunity where God gets to show himself. And then John 11:40, same story. Jesus said this, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of the Lord? Again, God's glory unpacking in the circumstance of her brother's death. Now, that's interesting to me. It seems that Jesus saw every opportunity, every circumstance in this world as an opportunity for God's glory to be revealed. I think that's a great way to live. And I'm learning more and more to live in that frame of mind, to get into a situation or circumstance, and instead of, how do I get out of this? How do we fix this? What caused this? Who's to blame for this? Get in a circumstance and start saying, God, how do you manifest your glory here? How do you want to? And how can I be part of that with you? John chapter 12, Jesus comes to this for himself. Now, we've used it in three very miraculous encounters. There's the wine turned into water. There's a blind man who Jesus does heal and causes a scandal in the synagogue. It's the man thrown out. And it gets Jesus another chance to engage the Pharisees, another chance to poke holes in their pretensions. Unfortunately, another opportunity for them to push him away. Lazarus, the same story. Lazarus becomes the climactic event for which the Pharisees now know they have to kill him. He's going to keep doing these miraculous things. People are going to follow him. This is now they need to take him out. And so even when he's talking about God's glory coming through this miraculous encounter, he's also realizing that the God's glory is going to manifest itself in his own death. So in John 12, he says these words, now my soul has become troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? But for this very purpose I came. Father, glorify your name. I wrote about this and he loves me. This is the prayer that has shaped my prayer life. I spent 42 years of my life mostly praying save me prayers or save my friends prayers. How do we fix this? God, give a miracle. God, change this. God, do that. Make everything right. Make everything good. Make nobody hurt. Save us. Save us. Save us. I prayed those prayers. And honestly, a few got answered, but I would say most of them didn't. Jesus comes that same moment for himself. What do I say? Father, save me? Jesus chooses another way of praying. And this is the powerful thing by which God's glory gets to be manifested. Instead of, Father, save me, he says, I came for this purpose. I came to die. So I can say, Father, save me. And you know, in fact, God would have. He says later he could have called for 10,000 angels to come and save him from the cross and save him from all that was going on with Pilate and Caiaphas and the rest. But he didn't, because he knew God was going to be glorified in this too. And that's the trouble with God's glory. We can hear about it. Sounds great. Sounds bells and whistles and water into wine and blind men seeing and dead men raising. And then we're all lustered by that. And then what we miss is sometimes that glory, and probably more often than not, inures to the laying down of our life. Not the exaltation of it, not getting what we want and looking good, but being able to say, what is it in this circumstance that glorifies you, God? What brings and glorifies you? Don't think of that as God sitting on his big lofty throne. He hasn't got enough glory yet, so he's got to do stuff down here to get glory for himself. That's not what that's about. What that's about is I want my glory to unfold in you. I want it to be visible in the world so people can see it. And even when Jesus is dying on a cross and most people around can't see it, a thief sees it. Mary and Martha and John see it. The centurion sees it. And they behold that even in death, even in a horrible, tragic death, God's glory is being revealed, not just in the fruit of the dying, but in the dying itself, the forgiveness of those causing it, the love he showered on the thief, the pouring out of his heart to those that were in need, even in the midst of his own need. That's the prayer. And if you don't know God and don't trust him with you, you'll never pray, "Father, be glorified." You won't. You're afraid of what that might cost you. And so we stay embedded in those "God, save me" prayers. And honestly, I think that's what causes us trouble in learning to listen to that voice and responding to that voice. And people say, I don't see that voice. God never speaks to me. I think we get caught up in the whole "save me" motif and the disappointment when God doesn't do it the way we think we ought to do it. And those disappointments heap on each other. And then finally, we don't trust anything we hear anymore. And then there's no voice left to be heard. And even though God's standing right next to us, talking to us his language, it just sounds like chatter in the wind. Because our whole mindset is for what I want for me, my convenience, my comfort. I want my water turned into wine. I want my blindness healed. And those are great moments when God does that stuff. I've seen some amazing things that God's done, and God's glory is revealed in those miraculous things. God's glory is also revealed in the decades of service that Mother Teresa gave to lepers in Calcutta, India. And the way people lay down their life every day, the way a daughter cares for her mother in her old age, the way a man takes care of his family, or even to his own expense, not to his own enjoyment and joy, but to give away all that he can give away so that others can be touched. That doesn't mean he doesn't look out for himself. I'm not talking about that, but in some ways. But what I am talking about is living for more than yourself, living for more than your own convenience. And that's the invitation here. Every circumstance you're in holds the potential for God's glory to be revealed. The coronavirus, job or lost job opportunities, all that's going on in our world right now, it's one of those things where we get to say, "God, how are you revealing your glory here?" And when the cry of my heart comes, not "God save Wayne," but when the cry of my heart becomes, "God, glorify yourself," and I pray it, not just as words to be repeated and wrote, but actually pray it from the depth of my heart. I want you to be glorified here. And I'm willing to walk with you down that road wherever it takes me. That's when Jesus, John 6, remember when the people came to him after, again, a place of God revealing glory. He fed the 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And those people chase him around the Sea of Galilee the next day. And he says, "You're only coming after me because you see You got food you didn't work for. You got free food. And now you want more of that." And they said, "Well, how do we do the works of God?" And he said, "This is the work." See, and he changes again the whole environment in which things are negotiated with him. How do we work the works of God? He said this: the work of God, there's only one, is that you believe him and the one whom he sent. That this growing engagement to believe him is what opens my circumstances and my life to the reality of God's glory. Like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where I follow that inclination, even if it looks like I'm going to die here, or I'm going to get lost here, or I don't know what's going to happen to me here. When I still follow, that gives the opportunity for glory to be revealed. I have more to teach you if you walk away and if you stay. I can't tell you how much I've learned in the last 25 years, 29 years now. It has just changed my life. So many things that my whole life in Christ has been rewritten since that day, but it's taken years, decades of that unfolding so that I can look back now and say, "Oh my gosh, that opened a door for God's glory to be revealed to me." And now how do I become part of that? Not just for me, but for others. How does the situation I'm in, how does it become a conduit for glory? And if we're leaning into that reality, that's what he's saying. From glory to glory, we are being transformed. From one event in which God's glory is possible to the next event in which God's glory is possible to the next event. And really, let's stop a minute, because I want to say, this sounds glorious. It sounds the most amazing journey that we could go on if you want to go on it. And it is an amazing journey. I recommend you go on it. But let's be realistic about this. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, we know in part and see in part. It's like looking through a glass darkly. So even when I talk about God's glory unfolding, the difference between a save me prayer and a God be glorified prayer, man, we don't know. This is not a linear, I ask Jesus, he tells me the answer, I do that, God's glory unfolds. Okay, next circumstance. It's not like that. It's much more like an adventure, isn't it? It's I'm walking with him. As I'm learning to do the things we've talked about on this whole podcast, as I'm learning to lean into his reality and he makes himself known to me, man, then that shapes something in my life. The next circumstance I'm in, I can now live through that differently because glory has shaped me. And then I live in that. And then the next circumstance. And it's not always, oh, Jesus, what are you doing? It's just the cry of my heart, be glorified in this. And as I hold my heart there, days, weeks, months, sometimes years, as I hold my heart there, then something becomes clear at some point. And that's not the point I control. Oh, in the old days, I had so many desperate prayers, laying on my bed, crying in tears, going on a walk, begging God, I've got to have this right now, right now, right now. I don't pray that way anymore. My prayer is much more relaxed because I trust that I'll know what I need to know when I need to know it. That God's bigger than my fears. He's bigger than my failures. He's bigger. This kind of journey I'm talking about is not for the performance-minded. If you get done every day, like, okay, did God's glory happen there? No, but I see that. No, I didn't see that. And you're taking what I'm saying as a set of steps to follow. This will kill you. But I'm hoping it invites you on an adventure. I'm going to walk with Jesus. And I'm going to know in part and see in part. And I'm going to keep my heart in that place of God, be glorified. And I recognize now when I pray those save me prayers and I just say, God, I'd really love to be saved here. But if you've got a better way to bring your glory, I'm going to yield to that. And I just want you to be glorified. Help me see what that is. And I'm just going to walk. This happens best when we're relaxed in a journey with him, not when we're trying to get God's glory to happen. Don't go all white knuckle on this. Don't go all performance because it doesn't work that way. Just this reality, every circumstance you're in, God wants to reveal his glory. Talk to him about it. Ask him to show you. Live through it with your heart open to see what happens. When there's a nudge, and we'll talk more about this next week, when there's a nudge, a certain direction or another, to the degree that you can, follow it. Follow that nudge. There'll be another nudge. God's not giving you the 5-year strategy. He's giving you next steps. And I'll take that next step. And then that next step allows other steps to be possible. That next step allows other steps to be possible. And it's just in the joy of following him that the reality of these things unfold. There's not a circumstance you're in that God doesn't want to reveal his glory. And for that, some of us need to cooperate, participate, let that happen through the way we respond in that situation. We'll not get it right most of the time. But God's looking to share his glory with us as we hear, as we trust, and as we follow what he puts on our hearts. And I say this about every circumstance I'm in that's kind of a mess still. I'll just say, you know what? The glory hasn't come yet. Until his glory comes, I'm not making any final conclusions about anything. I'm just going to keep waiting and keep watching.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.